Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Shane Mowry. Shane Mowry is a good friend of mine. He owns Bone Maniacs, which is a I would call him, you know, he's a social media influencer, has a YouTube channel, a website, a huge Instagram following, Facebook following, and he hunts all over North America. Shane is a log home builder. That's what he does for a living out in Idaho. Pretty interesting job. That type of job requires him to work long hours, a lot of days, and really reduces the amount of time that he can spend in the field. But yet he hunts a ton each fall, and he kills a lot of animals, and he does it by what I call speed scouting and bouncing from state to state when the time is right. And today we're going to talk about how he uses mock scrapes and cell phone cameras to quickly hone in on big bucks and kill them. So he often hunts throughout the Midwest for whitetails. He's in Idaho building log homes. And when the time is right, he'll, you know, get in his truck, run to Kansas, kill a buck in a few days, come home, do it again. Come home, do it again. And he's one of the most successful hunters that I know. He's not super picky when it comes to killing huge trophies, but he does kill some good bucks. But today he's going to talk about how we makes mock scrapes and how he utilizes mock scrapes to really hone in on those big bucks. The downside of this interview was it was done while he was on the side of an Idaho mountain building a log home, and our his cell service wasn't really good. So it's a little choppy in spots, but I decided to go ahead and publish this interview because he just has some good things to say. He's a little rough around the edges. He'll tell you that from the get-go, as far as he just speaks his mind. And he thinks sometimes that, you know what, if hunters are spending 50 days chasing a buck, they're doing it wrong. And he'll just flat out say that. Some of you might disagree with that, but that's just kind of how he is. He's a guy, no-nonsense guy. He goes in, finds a buck, kills him. It'll be a pretty interesting interview for sure. Before we get Shane on the phone, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds. They make some great fiberglass blinds, obviously, but they also make, some awesome soft-sided blinds. I love their ghillie blind, their bale blind. Those are two blinds that are a little more portable and can certainly outsmart big bucks. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, makers of the Final Rush shooting system. If you haven't seen that yet, check out fourtharrowcameraarms.com. They make this amazing system for attaching a shooting system to a blind or in the field. It packs down and goes into your backpack, and it just makes a gun a lot more steady, or a crossbow. Windscent, makers of vapor deer scent technology. We used a bloodhound to test how far that vapor scent travels, and a bloodhound from Tracker John was able to smell that odor from 300 to 400 yards away. Morel Targets, makers of the high roller target. Huntworth Clothing, check out huntworthgear.com. If you don't want to break the bank on hunting clothes, Huntworth is for you, huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Arrow Vane. Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads. Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest. Been tested at over 400 feet a second, and the rest still gets out of the way of arrows. Illinois Connection Outfitters, in Pike County, Illinois. The Outdoorsman's, makers of high-end backpacks and tripod systems for glassing game, largely out west, but their packs are very popular in the east and midwest as well. And last but not least, Wilderness Athlete. If you want to shed a few pounds or you're trying to get in shape for an elk hunt, check out wildernessathlete.com. My favorite product, Hydrate and Recover. It's a great nutritional drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Shane on the phone. Welcome to the Drop Time Report, Shane. How are you today?
I am doing great.
In the log yard, I presume, this morning?
I am here in the log yard. We just got done with a nasty hailstorm. It's cloudy and sunny and cold at all at the same time.
Sounds like fun, huh?
I choose a different word. Mother Nature does not know what it wants to do right now. That's for sure. Here we are, what, 1st of February, just about. And, you know, all this came within a couple of days and projected to be in the high 40s today. And I don't know. It's just the beginning of winter. I don't know what's going on. But I'll take it as long as the sun's out.
There you go. Well, today I want to talk about some of your deer hunting escapades. And as we talked about before the interview, you're a busy log home guy. You build log homes for a living. That's a labor-intensive job, there's a lot of, you know, spokes to the wheel, so to speak. So, and you kill a lot of things. And so you've had to figure out over the years, you know, how can you maximize your time in the field and fill tags in a short period of time. And I think a lot of guys spend a ton of time in the field to fill a tag, and you spend very little, so to speak, in comparison. So I just want to talk about that, how you've been able to be so successful in just, you know, little snippets of time in comparison to what a lot of other people do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I definitely, don't like spending a whole lot of time in the woods. One thing I really don't like doing is having tag soup. So yeah, there's a lot of tactics that I think are in my favor, with doing the style of hunting I do, and, you know, being able to maintain, boots on the ground here at the log yard too. So,
And a happy mama at home. Right?
And a happy mama with four kids at home. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And let's face it, that's a big part of it. It's a balancing act. Yeah. And so you were telling me a lot of times on your whitetail hunts, you're spending no more than, you know, a week, a year chasing them. You're from Idaho. You're hunting in other states, Kansas, Ohio, whatever. And so tell me, you know, you were telling me earlier that cell cameras is one of your favorite tactics to employ. How do you use cell cameras, and when do you decide, okay, now's the time to go?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll start, you know, putting out cell cameras, you know, several weeks before season, and wherever I'm hunting at, you know, the lease in Kansas, the lease in Ohio, you know, or we used to have a lease in Illinois, and we'd do the same thing. Although some areas, you know, it's a different style of hunting, high timbers, feeding areas and things like that. But the cell cameras, I think, is a big contribution to anybody. And I think whoever's not utilizing them, there's a lot of missed opportunities, I think. So I'll put them up. First and foremost, if you are after a target buck, you know, whether it's a mature buck or an animal that you need to be taken out, management reasons, whatever. Every hunter has different reasons for why they hunt. But I'll put those out, start finding out what his pattern is, try to figure out what his pattern is, and go from there. If once I find him in that daylight routine, and I think that is the key word. A lot of people, I think, always seem to think that, you know, whitetail are nocturnal animals, and I highly disagree with that. What they're failing to realize is that they're not finding out where they are daylighting. Somewhere in the forest, that animal is daylighting. You just have to find out where it is. Just finding out where he's bedding, find these travel corridors, set that camera up there. My go time is if my camera, when I use the cell cameras, if he's daylighting 2 days in a row round about the same time, you better bet I'm going to be in that standard blind that I've set up waiting on him on that third day. So that's one of my tactics that I like to use, whether I'm hunting, you know, whether it's whitetail, elk, mule deer, whatever, you know. So I don't like to spend a whole lot of time in the woods for numerous reasons.
It's important to note that you hunt, you know, many states a year, so you're trying to maximize and fill tags. It's not that you don't want to spend time in the woods. It's just on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing.
Well, absolutely.
So are you literally, you're hanging a scouting camera before season, you're getting pictures, and you have a couple days in a row where, you know, you're getting daylight pictures. You're literally hopping in your car and heading to Kansas? I mean, is it that fast? That's what you're doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I just don't put out just one camera. You know, I'm literally trying to find where he's at and what he's, you know, mainly what his routine is. And if that's in Ohio or that's in Kansas or Illinois, you know, Indiana, wherever I'm hunting, that's typically my plan for that. You know, along with,
so you,
okay. No, I was just saying, you know, that's one of the tactics to use. Yeah. Whether, you know, depending on if they're to and from food sources or, you know, of course we can probably talk about, you know, other methods, you know, with mock scrapes and things like that.
So in Kansas, how many cameras did you have out?
On the two sections, I think I had 18 cameras out total.
Oh my gosh. All those cell cameras or no?
All I think but three were cell cameras. Yeah. So,
okay.
The bill that I will spend on that, which is some of the cell, plans are relatively inexpensive now, but you know, say I have only $100 in that 2 months time, which I think it's right around that, the time, the amount of money that I save from just going out on the road and just, you know, haphazardly trying to figure out a buck, you know, just, I mean, it makes sense to me.
Sure. Yeah, I get it. Now, what is your favorite tactic to get those daylight pictures? Is it, food sources like you're talking about, or mock scrapes, or what's the go-to thing?
Well,
where you've had the most success.
The most success that I've had throughout for whitetail. Not everybody's going to be doing it. I was taught at an early age that, you know, the forehead gland is the most utilized and underutilized, tactic, you know, for hunters. I keep one of those in the freezer year round. I try to refresh it, you know, with a buck, a management buck. And I keep it in the freezer, mock scrapes and the forehead gland. You know, a lot of guys are starting to start licking branches and stuff like that. But, that's what I use. I'm always running mock scrapes. When I start setting up trail cameras, the mock scrapes there. And I always use, I don't necessarily always use the urine, but I definitely always use the forehead gland. And I think that's just what I feel is just a communal type of language that these whitetail are always utilizing. Because each one of them, I feel, has different personalities. If I have a buck that, we can probably get into this with this buck that I was after in Kansas last year, but each one of them has a different personality from what I feel. And if I get too aggressive, it maybe pushes him off. You know, some bucks don't respond to rattling, which I've used. So in the area that I'm hunting with, Kansas is different than what I hunt in Ohio, different tactics, you know, or Texas, wherever I'm hunting these whitetail. But,
you're breaking in and out a little bit. I don't know if you can hold the phone closer or, but it's definitely coming and going, which I was afraid of being on the side of a mountain out there.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, a nasty overcast right now and the fog's pretty heavy. You know,
let's talk about the glands here. So you're saving them in a freezer.
Yes.
You're bringing them out and you're just rubbing them where? Is it the licking branch you're using them on? Is it, you know, a post nearby? What is your tactic with using the preorbital gland?
So with the preorbital gland, I'm using it, you know, right beside where I'm making these mock scrapes. And also, I've also used it right in a heavily traveled corridor as well. I'll just, you know, rub it on a branch here or there throughout the trail. You know, just to get those deer or that buck maybe more engaged with what's there. There's a visitor in the area, and I want to get them more curious of to knowing, you know, who is this, you know. So I think it's a really underutilized tool that I think people, you know, should be more aware of. You know, maybe there are more hunters that use it. I don't know too many of them. Maybe we're talking to them. Keep it a secret. I don't know.
Yeah. But, now, do you find it as just a piece of realism that, you know, brings those deer in on a string, so to speak?
I don't necessarily think whitetail are always just, you know, come right in on a string. You know, the only time I've ever thought that a whitetail comes right in on a string is when I've been in Texas and you rattle and all of a sudden there he is. It's like, wow, that really works, you know. The only time I've ever felt that that a tactic utilized and boom, there he is from rattling. And I think, you know, that goes again is like that buck is, it seems like everything's, it has to be at the right moment. You know, so it's just one of those things that's by trial and error, I guess, you know, but it seems [S2] Sure. [S1] To be working out perfectly fine for me. I think it's, I was told this by a guy once, the most underused tool is a tool that you never use. So, you know, so I use it all the time, you know, and it seems to be working. So I keep
sure.
that up.
Now, are you using that in conjunction with deer ear and a lot of the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm still doing that. You know, to a certain degree, you know, I'll still put out, you know, dopey or things like that, you know, nothing too aggressive in the early stages, obviously. And then as the rut pulls in, then I'll get a little more aggressive. And throughout the trail cameras, let's walk back to putting out the scouting cameras and trail cameras is trying to, on that communal scrape or on that preorbital gland, wherever I put it, you know, I'll put a camera on that and you try to fill out what type of personality that buck has. That kind of gives me a little bit of an idea of, you know, is he going to be a fighter? Am I going to get him in on just pure love? You know what I mean? What do I have to do to bring him in? Is he really that aggressive that any other mature buck coming in is going to cause him to engage with him or not? And I try to figure that out. Sometimes I'm wrong, and sometimes I don't.
How are you figuring that out based on your videos or pictures?
Basically, if there's another buck, because most of the time you'll see another buck close by, you know. And I mean, any whitetail hunter will know that if a buck's ears are pinned back, you know, that means, you know, he really doesn't want anybody else around, you know, or. You know, and you see that a lot at food sources. You'll see that a little bit at a scrape or, you know, especially in rut, you'll see that more aggressive action. But you'll also see that, you know, early on as well, you know. So, you know, standing on their hind legs, you know, pawing at each other and things like that. So, or, you know, if you just come in, if somebody's really not paying attention to it, like one of the bucks, I don't know. He's still living. I haven't got him figured out yet. He just comes by and he's, well, you know, he'll check it out and he just doesn't care. You know, eventually one day I'll get him. But I think everybody's got a little bit of a different personality, you know, animal wise.
Sure. So when daylight comes and you're seeing daylight pictures on a regular, consistent basis of the buck in that scrape, that's when you get in your truck and head to Kansas or wherever.
Yes. Yep. That's usually been my go-to. I've always said, if he daylight twice, he's going to die on the third. So that's usually been my tactic. And, a lot of times that's held true. It really has. I have a couple other buddies that kind of hang tight to that tactic as well. So.
Okay. So let's describe this year's buck. A little bit about him. Give us a little backstory on him and how that played out.
Sure. He was a 7.5-year-old, eight. He was definitely in the progression stages, and, he was hanging around with actually my number one target buck. We call him Hernia. I think he was gorged or something on his left flank, and he's got a hernia back there. And he's been my number. That's the guy that I was telling you. He's like a passive aggressive type of deer. And I've probably jumped the gun twice on two kills that I probably would have just waited out. But I'm usually like, huh, that's a mature animal. I'm only in the stand one day and I can take this buck. Yep. Tag is gone.
Yeah. It's important to note before you get too far down this trail. You mentioned to me before that a lot of guys kind of hold out for that certain buck, and you are holding out for a certain buck too. But if a mature buck comes in and he fits the bill, you're going to wrap your tag around his antler. That's a little different than a lot of other guys. You're super aggressive. If a mature animal comes out, you know he's of the right age class, you kill him.
Absolutely. Yeah, even a management buck, Tracy. If I don't want, there's a 4-year-old there that I know is not going to get any better. If he's 4 years old and he's 120 inches, and I know that he's not going anywhere. We've seen him, and I take him out. I just get rid of him. I'll put my tag on that. And I don't have any remorse about that. He's going in my belly or my family's belly. So,
sure.
I'm not out there to, is it great to kill a Booner every year? Is it realistic? No, it's not. And kill the amount of, and be on the amount of, hunts that I want to be on. Everybody has their own, way of hunting or, what they want to do. If I had plenty of time, if I was retired, to sit in that stand and kill that one buck and only feel one tag, I would sit there and I would wait on that buck, to mess up. But I'm not that way. I'll feel a management buck. I will feel a good mature buck that we have on, whether he's number one on the hit list or whether he's number five on the hit list. I usually don't wait. There's no sense. I can get home, get back to work. So,
yeah. So let's highlight. Let's go back to that buck then, sure, that you killed this year, and the number in your target buck, and how he kind of interacted with the buck you killed, and how that all played out.
Sure. So we had Hernia there that he's been my number one buck, for the past couple of years, 3 years, and he's regressing now. I mean, he survived this winter. Which we have good camera of him yet. He'll be 8.5 this year.
Oh wow!
Coming up, he's a good buck. He has been a good buck. I mean, he's been in the 180s. Now he's probably down to 150. I don't know what he'll make this year. There was another buck that I shot, which we called him Bruiser, just a tank of a deer. We actually weighed him. He was like 305 pounds. He was, live weight on the hoof. He was a tank. They ran together, and it seemed that from my experience with the gland, with the scrapes, and I actually killed the Bruiser off of the scrape, is they were running together. And if it's one of those things, do I wait till maybe another 20 minutes to see if Hernia comes in, or if I go ahead and take the shot?
Knowing you the way I do, I guarantee what you did was take the shot, because you had to get back to build a log home. So you took the shot. what's playing out in your mind, and why did you kind of decide to take the shot instead of waiting out for the bigger buck?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, with Kansas, anybody that hunts Western Kansas, you have very little corn, you got Milo, and, you know, Milo is a contributor of second guessing, of holding deer. You know, it's a tough thing to figure out with their feeding patterns, because I mean, Western Kansas is not a lot of cover ground, so they'll stay in that Milo until it's cut. So hunting these pocket woods in between the Milo and creating the mock scrapes and getting these deer on the camera, it was challenging enough as it is. So when Bruiser actually came in, he came in first, and I knew that these guys were always hanging around together. I had a decision to make, whether I was to wait for Hernia or was I to go ahead and, you know, take a good, you know, 7.5-year-old buck, you know, get him out of there. And
how big was Bruiser?
Unofficially, I think he was right around 148 and some change, you know, when we taped him out. But he was actually live hoof, 305 pounds is what he was. He was a tank of a deer. You know, and I don't always necessarily go by what the bone score is. Sure. Yeah, it's great to kill those bucks, but like I was saying, it's not always in the cards to kill Booners every time.
Now, what day of the year did you kill them?
Oh, geez. What was that? I think it was on the 20. I have to think back. I mean, these are 20 tags ago.
Give me a roundabout year.
It was in September. I think it was on the 28th of September.
Oh, wow. And he was coming to the scrapes during daylight that time.
Yes. You know, and it's like I was saying, it's not always about the rut. Scrapes are utilized. Glands are utilized year round. You know, there's some type of communication with every animal. And I think trying to figure out what that communication is, you know, turkeys, it's vocal, elk, it's vocal, but with, you know, that type of, you know, whitetail or mule deer that serve a day there I think it's all about the scent and what they're producing and things like that. So, you know, obviously they got sounds as far as grunts and stuff like that, the rut, but, I think if you can get a deer comfortable and not being able to be detected by a whitetail's nose, I think you have a really good chance of being right there, right out of his bedroom, and being able to take him. And that's the key word, is being able to get in and be not have your scent all over the place and blow out the woods or blow out an area with a whitetail. You know, I definitely go in, you know, whether I'm setting cameras as scent free as possible, just like I'm going to be hunting that area.
And so that's a key to this story, is you kill these bucks over scrapes. I would, I would call it almost a sniper approach. You hang cameras, you get out, and you don't come back until you have enough information to kill that animal. You're not. And I think the greatest benefit of that is you're not in there all the time spooking deer, allowing them to figure out your pattern. You're staying out of there until it's time to kill.
Absolutely. You know, not to discredit any hunter or anything like that, when you hear people say, I hunted in my tree stand 100 days this year, that tells me you're a bad hunter. You know, it's like, you should not be spending that amount of time in any tree stand unless you were hunting everywhere. You know, but if you're spending that amount of time in a tree stand on an animal, you're not doing your homework. And I think you need to do your homework if you want to be successful. And I think being successful is, like you said, have a sniper approach, get enough intel. We don't go to war with a country with no intel. So you don't want to go into the woods and blow out any animal that you have intel on and to let him know you're there. I mean, you know, I don't ever claim to be some great whitetail hunter, but I gather enough information that I know that I respect that animal enough to know that he is pretty daggone smart in his own bedroom. So he has any inkling that you're there, a 6, 7, even a good 4-year-old animal, he's got enough senses of being out in the wild that he knows that something's up if you're not careful.
Sure. Now, so this buck, Bruiser, was he killed over the mock scrape that was really close to a bedroom?
Yes. Yeah. He was probably within 300 yards of where I projected their bedding being. And so, I mean, it was, and I think that's a good, you know, some people like to get in close, and I will get in close. But I feel that if you get in closer, within the bedroom of where deer is bedding, you have very limited, I won't say access. You're really limited. If you go in there, I feel more than a couple of times, you have pretty much one shot. You know, you better go in and you better get the deed done quickly as possible. If not, then, the chances are that you've done stunk up the place and he knows what's going on, and it may be several weeks before he comes back to that area.
So have you found over the last few years or decade, whatever, that you're either going to kill them early season this way over those scrapes or middle of the rut? Has that been the two key times?
You know, Tracy, I hate hunting the rut. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm pretty dormant when it comes to whitetail rut. You know, I'll hunt the rut with a gun. And you know, most people that, you know me, that, I mean, I love rifle hunting, but it's not my weapon of choice. But I think there's a lot of variables and hunting the rut is very good. It's very unpredictable. You know, yeah. So do you have a chances of killing a buck that you've never seen before in an area? Absolutely. But also is my way of thinking, I feel like my probability of killing a buck that I have some history with, if I have a story to tell, I mean, because really we're all in this as storytellers, you know? So I mean, yeah, I may kill the biggest buck of my life in the rut. What it means, absolutely, still mean a great deal to me, but I feel like the time that I've invested on countless hours at night looking at the trail cameras with the wife that usually yells at me, or my kids that really enjoy looking at them, you know, I feel like that would be a waste of my time at that point. But it's not that I dislike it. I just feel more confident early season. Or one of my favorite times to hunt good mature whitetail is 2 weeks before November, usually the last 2 weeks of October. I really like hunting whitetails at that time. I feel like there's a lot of emotions start being built up, and you can do a lot of different things if say the, you know, the gland's not working, the scrape's not working, which a lot of the times scrapes, if you utilize them correctly, they will work. But you know, grunts and bleats and things like that, getting some interaction with some light, rattling, you know, and I feel a lot of that is if you study that, the deer that you're after, you know, getting a good feel for his personality, I think you'll be successful with it. So
now, are you building most of these scrapes yourself, or these mock scrapes, or are you taking over community scrapes?
A little of both. Now, if I know that a buck is close to, say, a property line, or he's on one side, and I'm like, hey, he's probably on somebody else's property, or he may be, you know, somewhere other than where I'm hunting, or maybe he's a little bit too close to the bedding area that I'm comfortable with going in right at that time. I'll start trying to ease him back over, you know, getting more curious to where I want him to be at. And I think a lot of times as hunters, we let the animal dictate
where you go.
Exactly. And no, I mean, really, you need to manipulate him to where to go, because
you're basically setting a trap is what you're doing. Oh, you're setting absolutely. A trap for that deer.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the best strategy to have on a buck, you know. And I will. I mean, I'll save it. I feel like utilizing natural ingredients with those scrapes, save the gland, put it in the freezer, save the estrus glands, save the tarsal glands. I even save a leg, and that's what I'll use my scrape with. So I think anything that you can be natural with, why not use it? I mean, you probably don't want to look in one of my freezers, because
it's right next to last year's elk burger is a, you know, yeah. Hey, honey, go to the freezer and grab a package of burger. And she opens it up and, you know, surprise. Yeah. My wife's done that a time or two. Yeah, I understand.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, what? It's not an open baggie with tarsal glands. It doesn't smell that bad. You know, and maybe these tactics a lot of people they want to keep it secrets, but there's really no secret as hunting. I think it's really anything that you can have a deer or an animal more comfortable that with you being there. I think that's going to give you a better shot opportunity. I think it's going to have hunters maybe not rush their shot, maybe feel more comfortable with killing that animal, not having so much anxiety built up. And, you know, I think I think it just helps out you be a better hunter in general.
Yeah, because you have a buck that's comfortable in the scrape, right? I mean, he's been coming there, he's relaxed, he comes in, you've got him on camera, you know he likes that scrape, and so the shot sequence, you've set the table, and everything's just a little easier as a result.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's nothing more disappointing and more, hurtful is to get a wounded animal, and not find it. You know, we've all been through, you know, I'd rather have a clean miss than to wound an animal. But we've all been there. I mean, if you've never wounded an animal, as a hunter, you don't ever mean to. But I just feel like you just haven't hunted enough, because it's bound to happen, you know. You know, I've cut many logs with a chainsaw, and I can't ever say that I haven't cut myself. You know what I mean?
It's
bound to happen, you know, whether we want it to or not. It's, you do it enough times, something's going to happen. So I feel the better knowledge you have about something, and the better you practice things, the better you just go through the motions of doing things. I feel like you have a better chance of being successful at whatever you do. I think that's just a life lesson in general.
Sure. Now, in closing, how many deer have you killed this way in the last 5-10 years where you've just come in, kill them, and go home, so to speak, in 5 days or less you have it done? Just give me a roundabout. I mean, is this an every year occurrence just about?
Yeah. I mean, I'll put it this way. In the last 7 years, I have not killed a tag with whitetail that I've bought. So I feel it works. I feel that using these tactics that I have, you know. So, I mean, as far as being able to get a tag and feeling confident that I'm going to fill my tag. I'm going to. It may not be the buck that's on number one hit list, but I don't care about that. You know, I really do.
What's the biggest buck? What's the biggest buck you've killed this way, though? You've killed some good ones.
Bone-wise, and I don't ever have anything officially scored up in the books, but for me scoring it and just taping them out, I believe it's 172 and some change, something like that. I have to look. I got them all.
172 is a... Yeah, that's a good buck, though.
It is. You know, but in all honesty, Tracy, I'm... the thing with that buck, he was only a 5-year-old. Had I go back again, I'd probably let him go another couple years. But you know, I'm just as happy shooting a 172 as I am a 147-year-old 8-point.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Because I feel like I've just outsmarted him, and.
Probably the greatest thing, and you know, not to discredit anything you've done, but one of the greatest things for you and for anyone who's self-employed, that self-employment plays a big part of this, because you can drop everything and go when you want to, where a guy might say, hey, I've got the first week of November off. Regardless of what his camera shows, he has to wait for that first week of November, where in your case, or any self-employed person's case, you can drop everything and go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does play a big role in that. You know, being able to have that flexibility to do that. But it also, you know, there comes a lot of weekends that you work to try to play catch up, or you work, there are some sacrifices that you do, and having a very understanding wife.
Yeah, kudos to the bride, right?
Yeah. Yes, but she enjoys hunting as well, and she's taken some her choice of animal to hunt. She loves pronghorn hunting, so she enjoys that bow hunting those more than I do whitetail or anything else. But yeah, it all has to be a guess a good marriage all in all, throughout it all, whether it's work.
Little marriage advice in the hunting podcast today, right? we're gonna give some marriage seminars on hunters and their brides. No, but I know you are busy today in the log yard building log homes, so I appreciate you taking the time, and good luck this winter getting those log homes built.
Thanks, Tracy. I sure do appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. While interviewing Shane today, it reminded me that I recently did an article where I interviewed him on scrape tactics, as well as several other hunters. That article can be found at outdoorlife.com. I did that article for Outdoor Life. A bunch of different scrape strategies in that article, and a picture of Shane with a buck, and like I said, I also interviewed several other hunters on their scrape strategies. So check that out at outdoorlife.com. To learn more about me, visit tracybreen.com, TracyBreen.com. I use that website largely to book wild game dinners. To learn more about Shane, visit BoneManiacs.com. Thanks for listening today, and God bless.